it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 335. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. It's just going to be you and me this week, kids. I wasn't able to line up a guest for this week's show. Kind of a rarity. We weren't able to make something happen, but that's okay because we've got a lot to get to and we don't really have time to talk to anybody else on this episode of the podcast. We're going to get into all of the goings-on at the GM meetings with Matt Klentak, some stuff that Scott Boras said about all of the free agents that he has available. What about trades? The Phillies are going to have to make some trades this offseason, right? Who could be targets? Also, the Giants hire Gabe Kapler. We'll get into all of that. The Astros sign-stealing controversy. We'll get into some of that as well. And our end-of-season baseball awards have been announced, how that connects to some Phillies players, and I'll have some ridiculous Mike Trout stuff. Plus, I will also have a very special stat of the week. But before we get into the guts of the show, just a reminder that we have new content up on our Patreon site. So make sure that you check out patreon.com/hittinseason, and more will be coming this offseason. So check that out. Sign up on the $5 a month tier to get all of the good stuff. And once again, don't forget to tell a friend about the Good Fight podcast feed. And if you haven't, please leave a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. That would help our podcast grow quite a bit and just lets me know that you're thinking of us. But let's get into the guts of the show here. And let's talk about the GM meetings that are now wrapped up. Matt Klentak was, of course, down there talking to other general managers and talking to player agents and laying the groundwork for what we think is going to be a pretty busy offseason. Klentak followed up on his comments last week that the Phillies have to win right now, no questions asked. It's nice to see that they are all living in the same world that we are living in, that this is the time to win. Klentak said, "That's what I believe," as the meetings kicked into gear on Tuesday. He said, "Our roster is constructed in such a way that we have a core of talent on the club right now that is in their prime. We have a dedicated ownership and organization that's ready for it. We have a fan base that wants it, and it's time." So all the reporting indicates that the Phillies are going to be looking at the top of the starting pitching market. And we've kind of known that ever since midseason, really, that this was going to be happening. Although Jason Stark indicated that they may not be as aggressive on Gerrit Cole as other teams. And I heard something similar from Jim Salisbury on the latest At the Yard podcast that NBC Sports Philadelphia puts out. Stark said in a series of tweets, that people keep asking him what he expects the Phillies to do, and here's what he's heard. Add at least two starters, one on a big multi-year deal, the other trade upside one-year deal types. He thinks that they'll stay in the mix on Gerrit Cole, but it would take an Arrieta-like scenario to sign him, i.e. be the last team standing. Now, I don't think that means that they would get an Arrieta-like deal for Gerrit Cole, but that they're not going to outbid everybody else for Gerrit Cole. And when you look at all of the needs that this team has, I think that's probably the wise course of action. I would love Gerrit Cole, but unless this team's going to have a $250 million payroll next year, and I don't think that it is, I think expectations on Gerrit Cole need to be lowered. I mean, you heard me talk about it on episode 334, the luxury tax implications, how much a Gerrit Cole contract it would take them to the luxury tax. If you're already factoring in a JT Realmuto extension, Gerrit Cole puts you at the luxury tax without doing anything else. And so while I do think the team will probably go over the tax at some point this offseason, they're not going to do it in that way unless it's at the end of the season, unless it's at the end of the offseason. And we're looking at Valentine's Day, and it's a couple weeks till spring training, until they have to get down to Clearwater. And then I think you might see the Phillies get aggressive, but it would take an Arrieta-like scenario, as Jason Stark says, to sign him. So I think you're looking at guys like Steven Strasburg, probably Zach Wheeler is the most likely option. Or they make a trade, and I'm going to get into some possible names for starting pitching trade targets that the Phillies could be looking at this offseason. Jason Stark also says the Phillies are still trying to trade Michael Franco. It's more likely that they will non-tender him. Same thing with Cesar Hernandez, less likely to non-tender him. So I think it looks like Cesar Hernandez could be had in a trade, probably more likely than Michael. Looks like the Phillies will add a third baseman, second baseman, and or center fielder. Kingery bounces around to the spot that they don't fill, so it gives the Phillies some flexibility as far as what they're going to do this offseason. And Jason Stark also suggests that the Phillies will shop for bounce-back relievers, like a Dellin Betances type. And he's one of the free agents that I had the Phillies targeting in a piece I wrote for The Good Fight last week. So I think, you know, Matt Klentak is kind of echoing a lot of what Jason Stark says. He told reporters at the GM meetings that the Phillies will operate on a case-by-case basis regarding the players that they would forfeit a second-round pick and $500,000 in international bonus money to sign. That's, of course, to free agents who decline the qualifying offer. And all but two of the qualifying offer free agents declined that qualifying offer. The only two that accepted were Jake Odorizzi. He'll return to the Minnesota Twins on a one-year deal. And Jose Abreu, the first baseman designated hitter for the Chicago White Sox. And they're trying to work out a multi-year extension, but he's going to at least go back and play on a one-year deal for Chicago. I don't think either of those guys were on the Phillies' radar, to be honest with you. So Klentak is acknowledging that there are certain players that they would be willing to give up a second-round pick and $500,000 in international bonus pool money. That's not nothing. $500,000 in international bonus pool money is probably more valuable than the second-round pick, to be perfectly honest with you. Klentak said draft picks have a certain value, and sometimes you might be willing to forfeit that value, and sometimes you may not. I think certainly Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg, and probably Zach Wheeler would be guys that they would be willing to give up a qualifying offer, a draft pick for. But I don't think Josh Donaldson would be one of those guys. And we've heard Josh Donaldson's name mentioned with the Phillies. Mark Feinsand reported that the Phillies are one of a number of teams interested in Josh Donaldson, and I have no doubt that the Phillies are interested. I just wonder to what degree. Jim Salisbury said the Phillies have engaged Scott Boras on Mike Moustakas at third base, and that, I think, makes more sense. Because Mike Moustakas was not eligible to be given a qualifying offer because he got one last year, Moustakas will probably cost a little less in terms of years and dollars, and I think it makes sense because he's a bit younger. He also can move to second base if and when Alec Boehm is ready to come up, maybe as soon as next year, because Moustakas played a lot of second base for Milwaukee this past season. So Moustakas gives you a little bit more positional flexibility. You wouldn't have to sign him to as long a deal, probably, as Josh Donaldson. You can probably get Moustakas on a rich average annual value two-year deal or something like that. And make no mistake, the Scott Boras connection is real. The dialogue that John Middleton had with Scott Boras over the last two off seasons with Jake Arrieta and with Bryce Harper, I think, has led to a good working relationship between those guys. And Scott Boras is going to want to funnel players on the team where his top client happens to play. Now, you could argue Gerrit Cole may have just become his new top client, but you can bet that he's trying to sell John Middleton on Gerrit Cole, on Steven Strasburg, on Dallas Keuchel, on Hyunjin Ryu. All of those guys are going to be our Boras clients, and he's going to be pushing them hard towards the Phillies. I would love to see the Phillies go get Hyunjin Ryu. I would love to see them, because Hyunjin Ryu also does not have a qualifying offer attached. If the Phillies went out and got Zach Wheeler and Hyunjin Ryu, that would be a successful offseason. Zach Wheeler and Cole Hamels, not as successful an offseason. I think you can live with getting Zach Wheeler as your number one starting pitcher, as long as your number two guy is also real close to Zach Wheeler. And Hyunjin Ryu is that guy. Now, I agree. I think it's more likely that he goes back to the Dodgers, but I would make a very aggressive three-year deal for Hyunjin Ryu. Over the last 2 years, when he's been healthy, he has been lights out. And so I would absolutely go after Ryu as my second choice. Although I do think, again, the trade market is going to be something the Phillies need to investigate. Now, do they do that for a starting pitcher? Do they do that for a reliever? Or do they do that for a position player? In a piece that I wrote specifically for Hit and Season Patreon members only, and you can, again, find it at patreon.com/hitandseason, I wrote up about all the different pitchers who could be available in trade. And some of the names I mentioned, Colorado's John Gray. I also mentioned German Marquez and Kyle Freeland. Corey Kluber of the Indians could be a target. Robbie Ray of the Diamondbacks could be a target. We've heard his name mentioned a lot. Jose Quintana of the Cubs. Trevor Bauer of the Reds. Sonny Gray from the Reds. Although I think the Reds are going to get aggressive this offseason and go after some offensive help, because the pitching staff was very good last year. I don't think Bauer or Gray will be on the trade block, but you never know. Jose Ureña of the Miami Marlins, I think, could be available. He had a really awful year last year, battled some injuries as well. The Royals' Danny Duffy, again, doesn't really excite me, but he's a name that could be out there. And Pittsburgh's Chris Archer. If Brian Price thinks that he can turn around Chris Archer, he could be gotten on the cheap, and he doesn't cost very much, although he is getting a little bit older. But those are some pitchers who could be available. The Phillies probably have the trade capital to trade for any one of those guys. But none of those guys are going to be your number one over Aaron Nola, and none of those guys are better probably than Zach Wheeler. I think maybe Corey Kluber could be better than Zach Wheeler. Depends on how Kluber comes back from his injury. But other than that, I think Zach Wheeler probably is better than any of those guys. What if the Indians decide to trade Francisco Lindor? Or what if Chicago decides to trade Chris Bryant? Could the Phillies get in on those guys? I honestly don't see them having the pieces to match up on a Francisco Lindor trade. I think you'd have to give up both Spencer Howard and Alec Bohm to do it, and I don't see the Phillies giving up both of those prospects. I think that they could deal Alec Bohm for the right player. And I think they could deal Alec Bohm in a trade, say, for Chris Bryant. Because, look, this team's not going to be able to sign all the free agents. Some are going to come in trades. Now, I proposed a trade on Twitter for Chris Bryant, and I tend to think Chris Bryant's going to bounce back. And I know he's had some back issues. His power left him last year. I think Chris Bryant is a great bounce-back candidate. And people forget about how good he was until last year, when I think most people thought he was one of the 5 or 10 best players in baseball. And he's also a guy that can move all over the diamond, can play outfield or third base. I got a lot of pushback on this trade proposal of Scott Kingery, Alec Bohm, Adam Haseley, and Connor Siebold for Chris Bryant. And I can understand why. That basically takes away two potential center fielders in Kingery and Haseley. You lose your three best young position players on the 40-man roster in Kingery, Bohm, and Haseley, if you're not counting Bryce Harper. And Connor Siebold is probably the team's second-best pitching prospect. That is a lot. But any deal for a guy like Chris Bryant is going to hurt. You can't just make trade proposals of players you want to get rid of. You can't say, okay, let's give up Adam Haseley and Cesar Hernandez and Adonis Medina for Chris Bryant. That's not getting it done, guys. You've got to give up. When you're coming up with trade proposals, think of a trade proposal and then add at least one player that you would absolutely hate to give up, that you would hate to give up, that it would hurt your heart to give up. Like, it hurt to give up Sixto Sanchez for JT Realmuto last offseason. That's how you make trades like that. And when you're looking at, you know, why would the Phillies want to go out and make a trade for a guy like Chris Bryant when they could simply sign Josh Donaldson or sign Mike Moustakas? Well, I think Moustakas does make a lot more sense than trading for Chris Bryant, specifically because if you want Alec Bohm and you need a cheap contract, you need a good player on a cheap deal somewhere on this team contributing. You need some homegrown talent on the team to contribute. You can't have a team entirely composed of free agents. It just doesn't work that way. Alec Bohm would seem to be the guy that you would want to ascend from the minor leagues and at least take on a part-time role late in the season next season. Moustakas gives you the flexibility of promoting Alec Bohm to the point where, as I don't think Josh Donaldson would, and certainly Anthony Rendon would, force you into trading either one of Alec Bohm or Rhys Hoskins next season. But if you're going out and signing Josh Donaldson, yeah, that's 3 years. You can't keep Alec Bohm hanging around for 3 years waiting for his opportunity. And, you know, are you going to trade Rhys Hoskins this offseason? Probably not. So that means you're probably looking to deal Alec Bohm somewhere. And maybe you deal Alec Bohm for a starting pitcher like one of the ones I just mentioned. I can't think of any better starting pitchers than the ones I mentioned that will be available. But we don't know. We don't know what teams are willing to do. We don't know what teams are willing to cut expenses. Are the Cubs willing to cut costs and change their roster so much that they'd give up Kyle Hendricks? I doubt it, but maybe. You know, would the Rockies be looking to deal German Marquez? Maybe. I doubt it, but it's possible. So you never know. I mean, I included German Marquez in my Patreon piece. I did not include, and I did include Kyle Hendricks in my Patreon piece as well, because you never know. You never know. But, I mean, I think they're going to have to make some kind of trades this offseason. They're not going to be able to fill every hole through free agency. And I think that's especially true in the relief market, especially considering that the top relief pitcher is already off the market. The Atlanta Braves have signed former Giants closer Will Smith to a three-year, $40 million deal with a club option for 2023. That hurts the Phillies. It would have been, I mean, the Phillies would have had to give up a second-round pick and $500,000 for Will Smith. That's a lot. That's a lot of capital, plus 3 years, $40 million for a relief pitcher. The Phillies may not have been playing in those waters anyway, but the fact that the Atlanta Braves just got the best relief pitcher on the market hurts the Phillies. It makes them better, and it makes, you know, it takes away an option for the Phils that could have been there this offseason. So the Braves are the first team to make a big strike here in the offseason, and what I think is actually going to be a very slow 2019-2020 offseason. All right, let's get to the other big news from the week, and that is former Phillies manager Gabe Kapler has agreed to a three-year deal to manage the San Francisco Giants. And it's hard to believe, kids, but Gabe Kapler may have made a worse first impression with the Giants, with Giants fans, than he did here in Philadelphia. There's going to be less of a grace period for him in San Francisco than in Philly, which I didn't think was at all possible. Because there's a couple factors going against Gabe Kapler here. And I thought San Francisco was the best landing spot for him. Because you've got a team that's clearly going to be in a long rebuild. There are no expectations on Gabe Kapler to win baseball games next year. None. This is a rebuild that's going to take 2 or 3 years in San Francisco. They have virtually no good young talent. And the farm system, it's going to be a while. They're in worse shape than the Phillies are in terms of their farm system. So Gabe Kapler will have some room for growing pains here in San Francisco, unlike in Philadelphia, where he was expected to win games and where the rebuild was ending when he came on the job and was learning on the job as expectations for this team were elevated. It was just a bad fit, as we've talked about. I thought San Francisco would be a better fit. But there's a couple factors weighing against him here. In Philly, Kapler replaced Pete Maccannon. In San Francisco, he's replacing a Hall of Famer who won 3 world championships in Bruce Bochy. And the domestic violence stuff that came out last offseason with the Los Angeles Dodgers, it was impactful here in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia media definitely asked a lot of questions and pressured Gabe Kapler into trying to answer what he did, and probably more accurately to say did not do, while he was in the Dodgers system in charge of their minor league organization. It's hitting a lot harder in San Francisco. That is on the San Francisco fans' radar far more than it was on Philadelphia fans. And most of the news conference, or at least a large part of the news conference, was centered on that. And all of Kapler's mistakes in Philadelphia were talked about. Fans are not happy. Let me read you a couple of quotes from some of the San Francisco media here. Steve Berman of The Athletic wrote, "Bay Area sports consumers have seen contentious news conferences before. News conferences far more contentious than the one at Oracle Park on Wednesday. But it's hard to think of a news conference announcing a new hire in any region that included as many apologies and assurances as the one introducing Gabe Kapler as the next manager of the Giants." Andrew Baggerly, also of The Athletic, wrote, "Some fans are pissed off. Kapler received a 3-year contract. The announcement would involve plenty of wagon circling and narrative priming, even if some Giants fans were dissatisfied with Kapler merely based on his reputation for being unconventional. The missteps in his first 5 games of 2018, when he burned through 26 Phillies pitchers, including one he neglected to warm up, tend to linger in memory, even if Kapler learned from the experience and by several accounts became better for it." And then Grant Brisby, also of The Athletic, wrote, "Social media isn't the real world, so be careful about extrapolating too much from it. But this isn't a popular pick among Giants fans on social media. Whether it's the replies under Baggerly's tweets or the comments under a Facebook post, it's an absolute landslide of disappointed responses. Occasionally a few weeds of, well, let's just see how this works out, will poke through the cracks, but there are lots of minds that need to be changed." And one of the things Gabe Kapler said at his introductory news conference, talking about the Dodgers situation and the sexual assault situation that he failed to report to the police, I don't know what he was thinking when he said this, but he said, "I think if I could go back and do some of the Dodgers stuff different, I probably would have called my mom and asked her a few more questions about which steps to take." And then he followed and said, "And to Farhan's point, figuring out ways to support even better. I think this is the right time to say that I'm sorry that I didn't make all the right moves." He went on to say, everything that I did, I acted on from places of goodness from my heart, and I wanted to do the right thing, but I was naive. I was in over my skis and trying to do things on my own when it was very clear that I needed counsel, and I needed counsel from people like I've met in this community over the course of the last 2 weeks, and going forward, I would be seeking out that counsel. What? What was the thing about calling your mom, man? Look, I don't know how I would have handled that situation if I were Gabe Kapler. I would like to think I would have gone to the authorities. I would like to think that I would have done that. But what I would not have thought of was to call my mother to see what she would have suggested that I do. I would not have called my mom. And 3 years, or however many years it is since this incident took place, that's not the first thing I would have said at a news conference announcing, you know, that I was just hired as the manager of a baseball team. My goodness, Cap, what is that? One of the many concerns Kapler tried to assuage during his news conference was his heavy reliance on analytics while with the Phillies, and Kapler said that he might have leaned too much on the numbers and too little on players' confidence levels. One of the things I think that came out was that Carlos Santana felt more comfortable hitting cleanup in the lineup, but Kapler kept hitting him at number two because that's what the numbers said to do, and he said that in his first year as a manager, he really learned that that's not the optimal way to do things, and that he changed things up in 2019. But, you know, we kept seeing Rhys Hoskins in at the top of the lineup week after week. And we kept saying over and over again, drop him in the lineup, take the pressure off. He's pressing too much. And it never happened. Farhan Zaidi, also the team president, who is linked closely with Gabe Kapler. You thought Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler were linked closely together? It's even more so with Farhan Zaidi. These two knew each other in Los Angeles, and this is Zaidi's hire. This is the guy Zaidi wanted. For some reason, Gabe Kapler has this ability to bond with certain people, to really connect with certain people. And he's good at talking. He's good at making those personal connections, I suppose. But it's gotten him two jobs now. And frankly, it got him a second job faster than I thought it would. I'm honestly extremely surprised he got another job this quickly, given how things in Philadelphia finished up. But Zaidi said, I have to say I was a little bit overwhelmed by the unsolicited texts and phone calls I got from players and staff in Philly supporting his candidacy here and talking about how well-respected and liked he was in the Philadelphia clubhouse. Obviously, the Phillies didn't live up to expectations, and they felt like they needed to make the change, but I think he's a much better candidate to lead a team and be a major league manager now than he was when we evaluated him in Los Angeles. So Zaidi is seeming to say, listen, the Phillies were really aggressive in telling me how great he was. Never mind the fact that they fired him. There's a disconnect here, man, and this is what Giants fans are feeling. At least, I mean, Philadelphia fans, when Gabe Kapler was first hired, they didn't know what to make of Gabe Kapler. I think they were open to seeing what happened. And it was in that first series against Atlanta where he lost the fan base. But it wasn't before that. I mean, yeah, he had the blog with the coconut oil and the sun tanning and all and you know, the fact that he was a bodybuilder and all this stuff. And that clearly Philadelphia fans were looking at him off out of the side of their eye. But it wasn't hostile at first. Not to my recollection anyway. I don't remember it being hostile when he was first announced. People were like, what is this all about? Who is this guy? Well, what's going on here? But I think fans were, for the most part, willing to give Gabe Kapler the benefit of the doubt. It's when he pulled Aaron Nola early in the first game. It's when he failed to have Hobie Milner warm up. It's when they got burned with a defensive shift in New York. He got booed in the home opener. That was it. That was it. Unless Gabe Kapler had won the division in 2018 or 19, he was done. He was cooked. That was it. That was the first impression. It's incredible. In San Francisco, he's gotten even less of a grace period than he had in Philadelphia. But I understand it. He did not have a good track record in Philadelphia. And the Gabe Kapler apologists will tell you that he got the shaft. And, you know, maybe he did in some ways. A lot of what happened in Philadelphia wasn't necessarily his fault, but it's clear it wasn't the right fit. And it's also clear that there are some things that he did in Philadelphia and in Los Angeles that have created a skepticism and an anger among the San Francisco fan base that I think is justifiable. He's going to have to show that he is worth this job. And it's tough. He'll have come into two jobs here where the deck is stacked against him from day one. That's a tough way to work. I wish Gabe Kapler all the best. He was always very nice to me. you know, but, you know, that's, at you know, he's got a whole other fan base now that he has to work with. He's got a whole other set of bloggers that he has to reach out to and cultivate a relationship with. And, you know, we will see how that goes for him out in San Francisco. He should have more grace period as far as wins and losses on the field, but all the other stuff, he's got a locker room full of veterans, Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, lots, Pablo Sandoval. He's got a lot of veterans he's going to have to win over, and it's going to be a culture shock going from Bruce Bochy to Gabe Kapler. Going to take a quick break. When I come back, I'll talk about the controversy surrounding the Astros sign-stealing, and we'll get into some of the baseball awards and other Phillies notes from the week. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So let's get into this Astros sign-stealing story here real quick. This week for The Athletic, Mike Fiers, a former Astros pitcher who now pitches for the A's, said that the Astros, while he was there, used a center field camera that allowed them to steal signs from the catcher and then relay that information to hitters at the plate in real time by banging on trash cans or banging on the bench in the dugout just before the pitch was thrown. And there seems to be video confirmation of this on a couple different levels, where people on the bench bang on something to alert a hitter that a changeup is coming. Major League Baseball's investigating this because this would violate the rules of using technology to steal signs. Folks, this is the same as Spygate. I know I'm all for teams trying to find a competitive edge. Frankly, I'm all for sign stealing. If you as a player observe something that a pitcher is tipping their pitches, or you observe something that the third base coach is doing that it lets you know when a hitter is going to bunt or hit and run. If you're a runner at second base and you think that you've been able to see what the pitcher, what the catcher is flashing to the pitcher, and you can relay that information to your hitter in some way, I think that's fine. Because that's you using your brain and you trying to pick up on clues and being dialed into the game in such a way that you're giving your team an edge. But when you're using technology, I mean, technology has to stop at the water's edge in sports in some ways. I mean, you can't, if you use technology to give yourself an edge in sports, you're going to bastardize sports. It's going to be totally different. This has to be, sports has to be something that takes place between the ears, not something where you're using video cameras and where you're using touch, you know, iPads and touch screens and all this kind of stuff to give yourself an edge. And Fiers says this happened from 2015 to 17. 2017, of course, was the year they won the World Series. Jeff Luhnow, the Astros GM, said this week, "I've heard what you've all heard, which is allegations. This isn't the first one I've heard, and it's not the first one you all have heard. The league has looked into the Astros multiple times in recent years. A's players alleged that Astros players were clapping in the dugout before pitches to relay stolen signs during the playoffs. Kyle MacLachlan, who's listed as a member of the Astros baseball operations staff, was removed by security during Houston series against the Indians and Red Sox after he pointed a phone towards the team's dugouts from a nearby camera well. After game one of the ALCS this year, the Yankees said that they heard a whistling noise coming from the Astros dugout, which again prompted fears that Houston was stealing signs. You know, AJ Hinch laughed at that idea and denied it. If this is all true, there's no way AJ Hinch didn't know about this. No way. And it puts a cloud over everything the Astros have accomplished because players are pissed. Pitchers are pitched. And they've made the argument correctly that pitchers have lost jobs because they've given up because of games that they've had in Houston. Pitchers that have gotten knocked around against the Astros have lost jobs, have lost opportunities, have lost spots in their rotations. This isn't nothing. You know, if you're a pitcher and you're tipping your pitches by the position you hold your glove for a fastball and then the position you hold your glove for a breaking ball, that's on you. If you're a catcher and you're flashing the signs in such a way that you're making it easy for a runner at second base to know what pitch you're throwing, that's on you. But a pitcher and a catcher, they can't do anything about the center field camera. There's just no way that kind of stuff can be allowed. So we're also talking about with technology, robot umps, and we're talking about all this other kind of stuff. Sometimes you just need to punt technology. I mean, frankly, you know what I would do? I would get rid of the square box on TV. During games, I would get rid of the strike zone box because I don't think that's good for the game. It puts way too much of a spotlight on the home plate umpire. I would rather that be gone because it's too easy to see. I think it's too easy to see. I think it's too easy to second guess what an umpire is seeing in terms of balls and strikes. I hate the strike zone square. I think it's bad. I think it's really bad. I mean, and now, of course, you have game day for MLB.com. And so you can look in real time and you can see whether pitches are strikes or not. Maybe it's just stupid to wish for that to go away, but I just hate it. I think it's distracting when I'm watching a game. I don't want to see it. I'd rather that go away. I think we watched lots of baseball games for years without that being on there. Technology, there's just too much technology going on in baseball right now. And this is the old man get off my lawn rant for sure, but for certain, using a center field camera to steal signs and relay that information to hitters is wrong. And Major League Baseball better get to the bottom of it. It calls into question all of the success that the Astros have had in recent years. Not necessarily for the pitchers, because the pitchers that Houston has turned out, that doesn't have anything to do with the sign stealing. But offensively, I think it throws into question some of what Houston hitters have been able to do over these last 5 years. All right, real quickly, let's get into our end-of-season baseball awards and a couple other Phillies notes from this week. Rookie of the Year, Pete Alonso of the New York Mets, obviously hitting, led the majors in home runs. An easy choice for National League Rookie of the Year. And in the American League, as we saw in the playoffs, Yordan Alvarez of the Houston Astros, well-deserving of the American League Rookie of the Year award. Cy Young goes to Jacob deGrom of the New York Mets in the National League, his second straight. Justin Verlander of the Houston Astros also wins his second straight Cy Young award, beating out Gerrit Cole. And so the Astros had both the Rookie of the Year and Cy Young. And finally, in MVP voting, Cody Bellinger of the Los Angeles Dodgers takes home the NL trophy. It'd be interesting to see what would have happened if Christian Yelich had managed to finish the season. Mike Trout wins the American League MVP award over Alex Bregman. I'm going to have some Mike Trout stats here in just a minute. As far as Phillies go, JT Realmuto got some down ballot votes, 2 8th place votes and 2 10th place votes. That's really nice to see. JT Realmuto getting some love. No love at all for Bryce Harper. And I think at midseason, we would have totally not been surprised by that. But given how he finished the season, you could argue that he deserved at least some down ballot voting as well. Paul Boyer noted on Twitter that Bryce Harper is the first player since A-Rod in 2006 to have a season of 35 or more home runs, 110 or more RBIs, 15 steals, and an 880 or better OPS, and still finish outside the top five in MVP voting. Bryce Harper got no votes of any kind whatsoever. Now, I mentioned some silly Mike Trout stats a second ago. These are from Sarah Langs. The most WAR by position players since 2012, according to Baseball Reference, Mike Trout, 72, Josh Donaldson, 45. Fangraphs, Mike Trout, 72.7, Buster Posey, 47.1. I mean, this is a guy who's been worth 25 to 27 more wins above replacement than any other player since 2012. Before Trout, no MVP had ever missed the last 3 weeks of any season. But that was the case this year. Trout joins an exclusive list of three-time AL MVP winners, Jimmy Fox, Joe DiMaggio, Yogi Berra, Mickey Mantle, and A-Rod. And Trout is the first player to finish top two in MVP voting in 7 of 8 seasons. All right, some final Phil's notes for this week. Matt Klentak said at the GM meetings that Odubel Herrera's future with the team is definitely up in the air. He said, "The landscape has changed. Odubel's going to have to earn whatever he gets. He doesn't walk back in as the opening day center fielder. Right now, he's on the 40-man roster and under contract. What happens between now and February, I don't know." And also noted that Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn and Scott Kingery are pretty much all ahead of him on the depth chart. It certainly sounds to me like they are laying the groundwork to establish baseball reasons why Odubel Herrera will be released if they can't find a trade partner, and they won't be able to find a trade partner. Matt Breen reports that the Phillies have hired a hitting coach. Joe Dillon, the Nationals' assistant hitting coach, was hired by the Phillies, worked for the last two seasons under Nationals hitting coach Kevin Long, whose recommendation of Dillon carried weight with the Phillies because Long was the Yankees' hitting coach for 7 years when Girardi managed in New York. The Phillies did interview former hitting coach Matt Stairs and also Mets hitting coach Chili Davis, but it was clear that I think Joe Dillon was the guy that they wanted all along. He's pretty good with new age hitting techniques. He speaks the language of analytics. He's a launch angle guy, also about teaching hitters to keep the ball in the air. That's not going anywhere anytime soon, gang. Some Cole Hamels rumors. John Boggs, the agent for Hamels, told MLB.com this week that his client plans to pitch at least 5 more seasons and has received interest from 13 teams. That seems a lot. I think you can certainly count the Phillies as one of them. Hamels has expressed numerous times throughout the last year that he'd be interested in coming back to the Phillies, possibly on a one-year deal, but that it was totally in the Phillies. The ball was in the Phillies' court. Klentak seemed to give a vote of confidence to backup catcher Andrew Knapp. He said, I think it's really difficult for any player, but especially a relatively young player like Knapp, to adjust to a bench role when they've been a regular most of their lives. I was encouraged by the way he played in the last week to 10 days when he had a chance to play a little more regularly. I thought his at-bats were good. And I guess there's something to be said about not investing a lot in a backup position when you've got a starting catcher that catches 145 games, although I would think they want to scale Real Muto back in 2020. That's exactly what I would do. I mean, Real Muto should not play as much as he did in 2019, but it's possible the team goes to three catchers because there's going to be a 26-man roster in 2020 as Major League Baseball gets rid of roster expansion in September. By the way, Knapp hit 213, 318, 324 in 136 at-bats with two homers and an OPS plus of 68. In 2019, those numbers are not so good. All right, it's time for your stat of the week. This is only the second time in Major League Baseball history that the same team, the Astros and Mets did it this year, had the Cy Young and Rookie of the Year winners. That was done once before in 2015 with the Astros and Cubs. Still no team. And Alex Bregman had a chance to make the Astros the first team ever to win all three of the top individual postseason awards, MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year. No team has ever swept all three, MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year, ever in the history of Major League Baseball. The Astros almost pulled it off here in 2019. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Once again, just a reminder to head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon, which is, of course, at patreon.com/hittin'season. And again, leave a rating and a review at Apple Podcasts. But tell your friends about the podcast. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get podcasts. That's where you can find the Good Fight podcast feed. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.